Good morning. My name is Pat. Our contemporary reading this morning is Freedom by Langston Hughes, a poem for Juneteenth. Freedom will not come today, this year, nor ever through compromise and fear. I have as much right as the other fellow has to stand on my 2 feet and own the land. I tire so of hearing people say, let things take their course. Tomorrow is another day. I do not need my freedom when I'm dead. I cannot live on tomorrow's bread. Freedom is a strong seed planted in a great need. I live here too. I want my freedom just as you.
Hello, my name is Dylan. I talk at work all the time, and I get nervous when I talk in front of the church, so forgive the shakes. The scripture reading for today is Leviticus chapter 25, verses 1 through 13. The Lord spoke to Moses on Mount Sinai, saying, speak to the people of Israel and say to them, when you enter the land that I am giving you, the land shall observe a Sabbath for the Lord. 6 years you shall sow your field, and 6 years you shall prune your vineyard and gather in their yield. But in the 7th year, there shall be a Sabbath of complete rest for the land, a Sabbath for the Lord. You shall not sow your field or prune your vineyard. You shall not reap the aftergrowth of your harvest or gather the grapes of your unpruned vine. It shall be a year of complete rest for the land. You may eat what the land yields during its Sabbath, you, your male and female slaves, your hired and your bound laborers who live with you, for your livestock also, and for the wild animals in your land, all its yield shall be for food. You shall count off 7 weeks of years, 7 times 7 years, so that the period of 7 weeks of years gives 49 years. Then you shall have the trumpet sounded loud. On the 10th day of the 7th month, on the Day of Atonement, you shall have the trumpet sounded throughout all your land. And you shall hallow the 15th year, and you shall proclaim liberty throughout the land to all its inhabitants. It shall be a jubilee for you. You shall return, every one of you, to your property, and every one of you to your family. That 15th year shall be a jubilee for you. You shall not sow or reap the aftergrowth or harvest the unpruned vines, for it is a jubilee. It shall be holy to you. You shall eat only what the field itself produces. In this year of jubilee, you shall return, every one of you, to your property.
Okay, every year right about now, I have a problem. I've got a few, but there's one of them in particular that happens always about this time of year. It's what I would call a seasonal problem. It's not allergies though, so don't go down that route, but it is a problem that comes up every year right about now, the middle to end of June. And this problem is what I call my summer problem. And here's what happens. Roughly give March, early April, we move into spring, the days get a little warmer, and I find myself with a lot of enthusiasm and energy being really, really excited for summer. And when I think about summer, I really think about it like this, summer. And it's this big, broad, abstract idea that I can put in all of the things that I love about summer. It holds this eternal promise of long, lazy days, of meals outside in the backyard with perfectly grilled meats, sitting around a table, talking with friends, going to the beach, swimming in the warm waters of the Pacific. And every year I am so excited by summer. I just can't wait for summer. And then it happens. Summer shows up. Right about maybe the middle of June, end of June, sometimes July, that first day that June gloom cracks, and it gets hot. And it gets humid. And now we have mosquitoes. This is going to be one of the oldest person things I've ever said, but I remember when we didn't have mosquitoes in San Diego. That's how old I am. And now we have these little striped ones that bite my ankles and my calf muscles, and I can't get rid of them. And my office is hot, and I can't focus because we don't have air conditioning in my office. And summer arrives, and like a perfectly worn record, I find myself roughly 1 week into summer talking about how much I don't like summer. And every year, again and again, like an eternal recurrence of the same, I say it all over again. Here comes spring, I'm excited about summer. Here comes summer, I don't like summer, actually. Which is why I'm really excited about fall. No, I'm just kidding. It would just be the same, right? It's all over again. But what happens is that every year I find myself torn between the great vast difference of summer as an abstract idea and then the concrete reality of summer. And it every year, I can do this to myself over and over again. I can love the idea of summer so much that I actually forget about what summer actually really is like. And the waters of the Pacific are never, ever warm. Which is kind of a funny way of sort of acknowledging something that I think happens with all of us in one way or another, whether we are aware of it or not, which is what can happen with ideas and words that become merely abstractions to us. Words that are just ideals, which is that very often we can love the idea of something so much that we never admit to ourselves that we don't really like its actual concrete representations in the world. But it goes a little deeper than that, because sometimes as communities, sometimes as countries, states, and cities, a grouping of people can come together, and it's not just that they don't really like the things the way that they show up, but actually it's all of the ways that people can get together and claim that they love something as an abstract ideal that actually suppresses it in its actual concrete realities. Which can happen with words like freedom, which can happen with words like liberty, that sometimes those with power can get together and announce and parade around these words as abstract ideals so much that it actually can serve as a tool to actually oppress it in its actual concrete realities and specificities where it should be embodied and lived. Ask yourself why it is on this 250th year of America that more than ever we proclaim freedom, 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 and every year lose more and more freedom. It is not coincidence, it is design. There are so many words that the abstraction of them actually obscures the truth of them in the way that they should be lived out. Freedom and liberty, for sure. Love, sometimes. Humanity. The author Dostoevsky has one of his characters in The Brothers Karamazov claim that the more that he loves humanity, the less he realizes he actually likes individual people. A sharp but real truth. And also the word God. God can be such an abstraction, such a wide open idea, that people can put whatever they want to into that word God. It can come to mean anything and everything or nothing at all, rather than talking tangibly and specifically about who God is. And so I think this morning, one of the things that we need to consider is what this does to us. Abstract ideas about how powerful it can be when People worship an abstract idea to cover up a contempt of its actual concrete, real, lived realities. What happens when things are only abstractions to us? And our book this morning is the book of Leviticus, from the Hebrew Scriptures, what we sometimes refer to as the Old Testament. And our passage this morning that Dylan read for us earlier is from the book of Leviticus, which is understood to be a book of the law given to the Israelites in their time of wandering in the wilderness. The book of Leviticus, though, I think one of the things that we will see and understand this morning is how those of us who follow God, those of us who say that we worship God and by God so that I am continuing to be specific, we mean the God who liberated the Israelites from slavery, how often that understanding of God just as an abstract idea actually traps us, doesn't actually move us to action. And how the book of Leviticus, as an understanding of law, I think in a very real sense, leads us as followers of Jesus Christ to understand that the call to worship and love God is not a call to an abstract idea, but it is specifically a call to act in real and concrete ways about love and justice, compassion, and liberation. And I think what happens in the book of Leviticus is that very often we don't have a good understanding of the law. Sometimes, because of the way the Apostle Paul wrote about the Jewish law, it sort of gets couched as sort of like a burden. But I want us to recover a very different understanding of the law this morning for us, which is that the law was understood to be given to the people as a way of liberating them from following God only in the abstract, which is to say, not following God at all. The law was given to the people to show them and to teach them, if you wish to worship the God who has set you free from slavery in Egypt, this is what it means. This is what it looks like. This is what you do. Not in the abstract, but in real and concrete actions. Which is why sometimes we have a little difficulty engaging with the law when in the book of Leviticus or the book of Deuteronomy, because it is such an old law and so sort of like culturally formed that sometimes its specificity can be a little bit of a stumbling block to us. But that's part of its strength, was that it was given to the people to show them that they might understand this is what you do so that your worship of God is not simply an abstraction. This is how you act in real and concrete ways. And in our passage this morning, I think one of the things that we will see in this is how the law is understood to be a liberation from simply worshiping God in the abstract. Because the law asks the people to do two things. It instituted this sort of rhythm. And the first thing that it does is that in keeping with the law of the Sabbath, which was that on the first day of the week, all of the people were set free from work. And it was understood to be a liberation from work, not just like, oh, take a day off. It was understood to be a liberative activity. That in keeping with that idea of the Sabbath, that it should be larger as well. That there should be a larger rhythm, not simply one day of the week, but actually something that happened every once in a while, in every 7 years. And so the Lord spoke to Moses on Mount Sinai and said to the people, now when you get to the land that I have set aside for you, you will observe another Sabbath for the Lord. Just like every 7 days, you have a day of rest. Well, every 6 years, you will work in the fields and you will prune them and you will take care of them and you will gather in their yield. But in the seventh year, there shall be a Sabbath not only for the people who work in the fields, but for the field itself, for the earth itself. And it's important to understand that this action of rest, of Sabbath, of why that is. And we find it later in the book of Deuteronomy, when God says to the people, remember, you were enslaved in Egypt, and the Lord your God brought you out with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm. Therefore, God has commanded you to observe the Sabbath day. The Sabbath is a way that the people were invited to not understand simply as an abstraction that they worship a God who liberates, but to actually be liberated from work. Not just one day a week, but even one year out of every 7 years. It set them free from this need or desire or sometimes confusion to say that they worship God, to say that God is a liberating God, but to not actually live it, to not actually be liberated themselves or to liberate those who were in their service. And so every 7 years, here's what would happen. There would be a Sabbath of complete rest for the land, a Sabbath for the Lord as an act of worship. And they would not sow or field or prune. It would be a year of complete rest. And it would be for everyone who worked the land as well. And then to sort of keep with that idea, and every 7 years, and seven being sort of a perfect number, every seven times that 7 year came around, or at the end of 49 years, what is known as a Jubilee year. And here's what would happen in the Jubilee year. At that point, you would have a trumpet sounded loud. And on the 10th day of the 7th month, on the Day of Atonement, which means to sort of be united, to be one with God again, and what happened in this action, you shall have the trumpet sounded throughout all of the land. And in that land, you would hallow and you would make sacred that 50th year, and you would proclaim liberation throughout the entire land and to all of its inhabitants. And it would be a Jubilee year for you. And here's what would happen. Every piece of property that had been lost over those previous 49 years, whether because of debt or some sort of circumstance, anything that would happen economically or otherwise or socially or politically that would cause families to lose the land that was originally theirs as it was all distributed equally and equitably at the beginning, it would be given back to them. And if you had fallen into service for someone, sort of an indentured servant, even if your debt had not been worked off, it was erased in that day. The 50th year was the year of Jubilee. It was a time of economic reset, of putting everything back, of actually tangibly, economically, and socially liberating those who had fallen into oppression, setting things back the way that they should be, again, being right with God in this act of atonement. It was, in a very real sense, something that would remind the people that when they say that they followed and worship a God who liberated them from slavery, a God who liberates as an act of love and justice and righteousness, that's not an abstraction. That means something for their lives and for their fields and for what they do. That they are called in their act of worshiping that God to not simply say, oh, we worship a God who liberates, but they are called into very act of liberation themselves, for themselves and to others and for the land and earth itself. It was a rejection of abstract ideas and a call for the people, live this out. For you cannot say that you worship and love the God who liberated you from slavery in Egypt and not continue to engage in acts of liberation yourself and for your community and for those in need among you. It was a rejection of God as an abstract idea, that you could just say that that means whatever and could do anything. If you worship and love this God, here is what you do. And this was the Jubilee year, putting it all back the way that it was called to be originally. It's no accident or coincidence that the celebration of this week, Juneteenth, is also known as Juneteenth Jubilee. Because what happened on that day of June 19th, 1865, When word finally reached the last enslaved men and women in Galveston Bay, Texas, was that the words of equality and liberty and liberation and freedom, that on that day they ceased to be empty abstractions for those people. For the men and women and children in Galveston Bay who had waited more than 2.5 years for these abstract ideas to finally reach them to be real and embodied truths, it was a day of jubilee, biblically and sacredly, for sure. It was an action in that day that these words were no longer abstract words, but real and embodied truths, a jubilee, absolutely. But friends, also in this weekend and in hearing these words from the book of Leviticus, let us continue to be reminded just how deeply and truthfully Black Americans are still waiting for full jubilee in the country in which we are right now. How drastically and truthfully these words, equality, liberty, freedom, how much these continue to be abstractions more than embodied realities in the economics and social structures of this country. Jubilee is still waited for. And it's true locally. A few years ago, we did a study on the effects of redlining, which is what happened when Black Americans would go to banks to go to get loans to buy their first homes, and there were entire areas marked by red that they were not permitted to get a loan for in those homes. And redlining has continued economic effects here locally in the neighborhood of Normal Heights and of Kensington. And that effect continues. Jubilee has not yet been realized. And it is true nationally. In a country that here in this 250th year announces and proclaims freedom and liberty for all. And yet the Voting Rights Act of 1965 continues to be chipped away by the highest court of this land. Let us be real and truthful and honest about this, that I think that this is a country that loves these words far more in the abstract than to actually live them out in concrete and true, real ways, particularly economically. If we are people who claim that we worship God, or claim that they are lovers of God, or claim that this is a nation founded on God, then my friends, let us be a church and a people who remind each other, and remind those who would say this, that the word God is not an abstraction, that the word God is not something to which you can ascribe any idea you want to or none at all, and certainly not continued oppression of Black Americans. But let us remind them and remind ourselves in light of this passage today who God is. And the God that we worship and the God of the scripture is the God who set the Israelites free from slavery in Egypt. It is the same God that put into the law the year of Jubilee so that these words of liberation and justice and equality and righteousness are not simply abstractions, but they are lived concrete realities. And it is the same God who through the prophets told God's people that what God really, really wanted was not empty words of praise, but actual works of mercy and justice. And it was that same God who came in the flesh as Jesus of Nazareth, son of Mary, who came to proclaim release to the captives and touched the lepers and overturned tables in the temple and was love embodied in every single action that he took. Let us be reminded who God is. That this word God is not an abstraction for us, and certainly not for the Methodist people, but God calls us in God's worship to love God, to act in love in real and concrete ways. Let us reject God as an abstract idea and join ourselves with what God has called us to do. If we say that we worship the same God who liberates people, then let us be people of liberation. That is worship of God, and that is love of God more than voices raised. Friends, it was John Wesley who started the Methodist movement. And when he started the Methodist movement, it was his greatest desire that he embody and create by God's power and spirit a people who would live out their faith. That these words of love, that these words of compassion, these words of liberation, liberty, and freedom, that these would not be abstract words, but they would be what actually motivated us in a real and true biblical way, in sacred ways, in light of Jesus Christ. And yet it was his deepest fear, he would say, near the end of his life, that the Methodist might be a people in name alone. That the Methodist might be those people who simply say these things without living them. In short, that we might be people of abstraction rather than real and concrete acts. What it means to follow Christ is to act. It's to take action. It is not to have an idea of God and Jesus and what discipleship is as vague ideas in which we can put anything and therefore it means nothing at all. It is to be God's people. It is to live according to the law as Jesus came not to abolish it, but to give it in all of its fullness, in the fullness of its love. So my friends, in this week, as we go from this place, as individuals and as community, let us be people who reject abstraction. Don't let your faith be an abstraction. Don't let following Christ be an abstraction. Let this be calls to particular acts, real and concrete works of neighbor love, acts of liberation and justice. For this is what God calls us to do and who we are called to be. Amen.